Hey everybody, thanks for joining us this week on Code Chat. I'm really excited about today's conversation. I'm gonna be talking with Dan about a library called Maker.js. Let's go ahead and jump right in. This could be a really fun topic. So Dan, why don't you tell us about a little bit about yourself if you'd like, and then what is Maker.js? What are you working on here?
I'm Dan. I'm a longtime developer. I've been writing code since I was 13. One of the first things I ever did when I was 13 years old and was learning to write in BASIC was I wrote a program that lets you draw shapes on the screen.
Okay.
And here it is 30 years later, I've come completely full circle. I just haven't stopped doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But basically, I got into 3D printing and stuff a year ago, and okay. And I just loved it. And I found this library called OpenSCAD,
yeah.
And which lets you, as a programmer, draw things with code. So
okay.
Once you're a programmer, you never go back. You love that code creates stuff.
Yeah, doing it programmatically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a series of steps that can be reproduced.
So in other words, a lot of people are familiar with design tools where they use something like Adobe Suite. Most people use Photoshop, but they might use Illustrator.
Yeah.
And so they have the ability to draw the exact same thing, but you're doing it with a mouse.
Yeah.
And if anything changes,
yeah.
You gotta go back and change it, right?
Yeah.
And creating three circles is fine, but creating 1,000 is a whole different matter, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I always have this sort of respect, or I don't know what to say, sympathy for all the designers I work with that work with these tools. And coming from a source code programmer's background, what if I screw this file up?
Yeah.
You undo your checkout and suddenly you can start over magically.
Yeah.
You know, and in that world, I noticed like, you mess up a bunch of pixels and it's almost like you're kind of sort of repainting something again. You're like repainting it to
yeah.
get it back to that state. It's like, ouch, I prefer code.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I always want to look at how I'm going to do things programmatically.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's interesting though is that you created a library for, you know, creating shapes, and these shapes are, you're encouraging people to use these for cutting out things and for 3D printing things, and you chose JavaScript. Tell us why you chose JavaScript for that library.
Well, I was inspired by OpenSCAD, and when and OpenSCAD, it lets you sort of use cylinders and some real primitive shapes, and they created their own language to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And while I love OpenSCAD so much, I actually thought that language was sort of a little bit of a barrier, because
yep.
now I'm learning another language, and
yeah.
then there was some nuances to looping and other kinds of things, and sort of variable scopes.
Yeah.
Those kind of things that programmers kind of care about, you know. they had their own sort of language, and I'm like, why are we recreating languages all the time?
Yeah.
I think JavaScript is a really good scripting language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes time to doing these little small tasks sort of embedded in other stuff, JavaScript's perfect for that.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so give us the elevator pitch on what exactly Maker.js is, what it's designed for at a
yeah.
high level.
It's all about two-dimensional line drawings. So that's really it. It doesn't do anything except line drawings. And I use simple, we use a line, a circle, and an arc. Those are the three primitive line drawings that you've got there, and you just build from there.
So it doesn't do 3D?
It doesn't do 3D.
Does it do any text?
It doesn't do text
okay.
yet.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do like ellipses or quadratic Bezier curves,
mm-hmm.
but you can kind of get away with a lot without those, right?
Yeah.
Now. Yeah. It doesn't do fill, it doesn't do animation, it doesn't do anything like that. It's just line drawings.
Okay. Can you give us a quick example you just showed me this example using the logo, and I think that'll really drill home the concept for folks.
Oh, okay.
So let's point them to microsoft.github.io/maker.js.
Yep.
They can all go there, and why don't we walk through this this demo with the logo.
Yeah. So click that demos button.
Okay. And I have a drop down here, but we're going to stick to the logo for now. And now,
yeah.
now let me just clarify one thing. You're not delivering here a website or an app. You're delivering a library.
That's right.
You're not even delivering an API. You're delivering a library, which is an interesting way to deliver something these days, right?
Yeah, I think so. Most people want to have an app that you can download.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you have an app, if you're an app builder and you can embed JavaScript in your app, this guy can be embedded in your app.
Okay.
Right? So it's JavaScript, so it's really comfortable in a web page. So, you know, I was inspired by a guy here in the Microsoft garage who did an alternate version of those laser cut boxes.
Right.
And he had this web page that said, hey, here's this alternate version of these laser cut boxes. You want to try it? Go download Inkscape. Go download the Inkscape and add this plugin to your Inkscape. And it's like this whole chain of commands.
Yep.
And I was, another inspiration was his website going, you know, why can't I just doodle around with your thing right there in the web page?
Yeah.
Why can't I just download it as soon as I'm finished doodling with
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right.
And that's what we have right here.
What was his website?
This was a guy, Reed Borsek, in Microsoft Garage. Reed, your hero.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
And the tool? Did he end up creating a tool?
He ended up creating a plugin for Inkscape, and it's written in Python.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah. And I think he actually derived his code from another person who wrote their original code in Python. So
okay.
Here's another great example of code inheritance and, you know, taking someone else's code and then the whole...
Which is highly encouraged.
You know, forking code, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Now I want to introduce forking drawings.
Okay.
That's what we have here.
And so now, since you've created a library, now you've just got various instantiations. Here you've got a demo page where you're using that library, and it could exist. Somebody else could use it, consume it, create their own Windows app or mobile app or their own website, whatever.
Their own website.
Okay.
And it also
Excellent.
Runs in Node.js. So
okay.
If you wanted to create a cool little GUI app for your Raspberry Pi, go ahead.
Or just an engine where with the Raspberry Pi, maybe you have, I'm just brainstorming here, maybe you've got some toggle switches that change some of the parameters here.
Yeah.
And then that engine is able to turn that into an SVG file on that Raspberry Pi and, I don't know, maybe show it or draw it with a laser or something.
Oh, yeah. You know, people are making laser cutters out of Raspberry Pis these
days,
too.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's right.
It'd be so neat to see that whole thing on this ecosystem and never really leave that device.
Yeah. Okay, so this logo... It's really well designed, I think, the M for Maker.js, but we can tweak it, right?
Yeah, that's what's cool is this was originally drawn by a real designer in Adobe Illustrator, and I says, well, I can't have a logo for Maker.js that I can't actually make in Maker.js.
that's awesome.
So I coded this logo up.
Okay, and it has various attributes like the radius of these curves, and I can grab this slider and change those.
Yep.
And it affects it.
Yep. And you see we've even got sort of an outline around the whole thing. So if you change this one I called outline here, you can make it sort of thicker or real thin.
Wow. Okay, I can change the height of the thing overall.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, though, since it's scaling, that doesn't have a huge effect. Change the length of the ear on the M.
Yeah, that little guy right there.
And the inner radius inside that M. That might look interesting to have highly curved ones. Serif height, I'm not sure what that is. Okay, gotcha. Speed, oh wow.
There we go, got a little bug in the program.
Yeah, did some cool stuff with that. All right, well this is cool. What else do we have for demos that drill home the concept?
Well, a real easy one is the smiley face guy right here. Choose the smile.
Okay.
This is always my sort of hello world, right? Because everyone
okay.
can kind of relate to this thing. So if you go to the customizations here.
Which one should I change?
You could change anything. So I like to change the span of the smile. So you just moved his, I called that droopiness. You can make his smile be a little more droopy. You can make it be his smile wider or smaller.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah, so.
Whoa. Toothiness.
Yeah, toothiness. I don't know what to call these things, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right? It's just like, you know, to the program, it's just a parameter. But to when you see this thing, it's like, how do you name that?
Okay, so now one of these that you showed me I find really interesting. I asked you, what's the most complicated one? And you said, try this one. And I looked at it, and you're saying this is like a speaker grill. And it's hilariously coincidental because I recently, as in last week, was saying, I need to create a speaker grill. I literally have some...
And you're going to laser cut it?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to laser cut it. Yeah. I literally have some some gray acrylic, and I want to cut the grill out of it, and I have a specific application I want to paste this into, and so it's just perfect. It's absolutely
awesome.
Perfect.
Great.
And I'll tell you, I had a discussion with a designer saying, I know how I would do this in my vector tool. I don't use Illustrator as much. I usually use CorelDRAW, but same type of thing.
Yep.
I know how I would do this here, but do you have any programmatic ways of doing this? And this designer said, no, I would just use the tool and draw a bunch of circles.
Yeah, I think what they would do is they would probably draw one, maybe two or three circles, copy paste repeatedly until they have a whole row, and then paste the row a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, or I know that there are, like in CorelDRAW, I've got the ability to put one circle in the start and the end, and then say create a blend between those, and it creates all of those shapes.
Yeah. I think it's also got tween,
which
does all these sort of repetitive tasks for you.
Yeah.
But you're still in that sort of GUI world.
Yeah. I'll actually show you here what I created. This is what I made in CorelDRAW, and I actually created a rectangle and then another rectangle, and I blended them so it created all the rectangles in between, and I could adjust how many. Mm-hmm. I rotated it, and then I intersected it with a circle, and that's what it created, what I want to cut out with the laser cutter, but I could have used Maker.js to do something like that.
Yeah, and you might have some sort of macro tool in here to sort of, next time you want to make a smaller speaker grill, maybe you could have used your macro or something like that, but it feels like you're always learning some sort of embedded language in some app.
Yep.
And then if you wanted to share that with me, if I want your speaker grill, I have to have this app.
Yep.
And then I've got to install your macro.
And the fact is that I wouldn't do that macro because this is one project. And so if it doesn't pay off for me to use that.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to come back here and I'm going to do it manually. And that's just unfortunate. It really is unfortunate.
Yeah. So that's the inspiration of something like Thingiverse, where people are making these drawings and uploading them, and then somebody will say, hey, I wonder if someone else has done this before.
Yeah.
And right now there really isn't a place for that.
And
for
I think
2D.
Even on Thingiverse, don't they have some ability to enter parameters and have parameter-driven designs?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost a similar user interface to this where you've got these little
sliders
controls and stuff. Yeah,
that's absolutely awesome. And I know I use Fusion 360 a lot, and that's more of a use your mouse to design things as opposed to doing it programmatically. But it's a parametric tool, and so when I start off designing something, I was recently designing something that was cylindrical, about 100 millimeters diameter, maybe 20 millimeters high.
Yep.
And the very first thing I do is I go in and I add some parameters, 100 millimeters width, 20 millimeters height.
Right.
And then as I design the thing, I base it on those parameters. And now I can always go back and I can modify those parameters and completely change it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Then if you want to share with me, then I've got to create an auto Fusion 360 account to share with you.
Right? That's right. That's right. Yeah, so it's not pure code. Now we're going back to pure. So show us how this vent grid circle works.
Well, if you want just to get a step back for a second, let's drop this drop down and go back just to the vent grid.
Okay.
So this was something I thought, hey, maybe as an example, maybe people are making speaker grills and wow, here it is that this was just an abstract idea. Yeah. So in this one, if you scroll up again, the parameters to this are a height and a width, basically. So you can make this thing a lot wider. And there you go. Programmatically, it just created a million circles, and it followed the 60 degree so that they're all sort of equidistant in a hexagon pattern.
Okay.
But then you can change the radius of those circles, and then you can change the spacing between them. So. And this was a perfect candidate for, I'm thinking, in a speaker grill, typically you want those in a circle. But hey, maybe you want them in a rectangle too.
Mm-hmm.
So for the vent grid circle, what we do is we take a vent grid in the code, we actually take one of those, and we will, for every circle that's drawn there, we'll compare it against a larger radius circle and say, does this fit within this circle? If so, we'll use it. If not, we'll clip it.
Okay.
Along the border. And if you're really adventurous, we can go and look at the code for that.
So. Okay, so you were telling me that a circle may have landed outside of this larger one, and so you dismiss it.
Yeah.
Some land entirely inside, and so you accept them.
Yeah.
But then tell us what you do with here.
So what we have here is what we're going to do is compute the intersection. And there can be two forms of intersection. A very rare case is that two circles will be perfectly tangent.
Oh, wow.
Which means you're just going to have one sort of point of intersection. And then maybe this one's a good example. Maybe that one is. And then we actually just accept that one.
I see.
If it does intersect with just one, we'll just take that. But for the most part, what we're going to do is we're going to take the intersection of this large circle, take the intersection of that small circle, and find the two points where they intersect, and then clip each one of those to the points where they intersect.
And draw that arc to fill it in. Okay.
Yeah.
Super. Okay, so I understand that. Now let's get into the code for this. How do I see the code for how you did this?
So everything on here is completely on GitHub. So even that little sample app with the zooming, where you can zoom in and stuff, everything's right here inside of GitHub.
Okay, so I'm going to go to the examples. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And so I wrote the event grid circle in TypeScript.
Okay.
But it shouldn't be too hard for JavaScript viewers to kind of see what's happening.
Okay,
here.
Excellent. And here it is. Let me up this a little bit. I think everybody can see that. Okay, so looks like we've got a requirement on VentGrid, so you literally have a dependency on that.
Yeah, and that's what I really love about Node.js. So the fact that this is built in Node.js means that we benefit from the require and common JS packaging system. So you can require someone else's drawing and take that dependency. And MakerJS didn't have anything to do with any of that infrastructure. So if you're comfortable with taking requirements with other code, that's the same exact.
Does this mean that there's a package in the NPM package repository called VentGrid?
Well, you know, we won't dive too deep into packaging. But you see in this one, I've just sort of taken a requirement on a local file.
Yeah. Okay.
So require is really a neat function where you can just require on a local file that's sitting there in your same folder or in a different folder. Or you can do the fully, if this was not a path, if it was just a name,
That
would be the name of a package.
Okay, and then it would go to the store and get it.
Yeah, gotten from a node package manager.
Okay, so let's look at, we're in VentGrid Circle, so let's...
Yeah.
Let's look at, would it be helpful to go look at VentGrid and see how the circles are drawn? Is that a little simpler?
Sure, we can do that real quick.
Okay, so I'm going to go.
You can just click examples there.
So we'll go to the VentGrid TS.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to see how this thing draws its circles. And I see some loops and some conditions here, right?
Yeah, I think what we'll do is we'll scroll down a little bit where we get past the intermediate stuff, and what we're going to say is, what we're going to do is draw rows.
Okay.
So, exactly, so I've got a Y count, so we're going to go this way, and we're going to draw a row, and then what I do is I just, every time I draw a row, I draw its sort of mirror image row.
Okay.
So one loop sort of goes up, but it also draws both sides of the thing.
Okay.
Because if you look at the vent grid, we also have this alternate kind of concept. So you notice the circles aren't in a complete perfect grid. They're in a sort of a 60-degree offset.
Sure.
So we need to know when we're alternating there.
Okay.
But, you know, the next row will be back on center.
I see.
Yeah.
And where do you actually draw the circle?
Let's scroll back up a little bit here. So here's the actual circle. Again, we've got the sort of the alternate circle.
Yeah.
So I think in the row I'm also doing left to right.
Mm-hmm.
So I told you before, I'm going to draw the mirror image sort of top and bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It also is really easy to start in the center of this vent grid and go left to right. If you show the example.
So you're going to the right, and then alternately you're going to the left.
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah. And when you look at if we go look at the example, I sort of have that origin crosshair.
Mm-hmm.
And that really illustrates that the center circle is in the center of the origin. Yeah.
I got you.
So we just sort of do the mirror image.
So you're generating it from the center out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what I want to do is, as I generate from the center out, I want to make sure if I'm within the boundary of you wanted a height and width.
Okay.
The interesting thing there is that because you can give me different sized circles and you can space them out differently, and if you give me a sort of a rectangle here, you know, that circle, you say, well, I want this circle here. I'm not doing the clipping that we saw with the vent grid circle. I'm not sort of clipping circles to a line.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to draw extra circles to say maybe I'm not going to be in there. So it's going to compare to say, I may or may not be in this thing. So someone else wanted to take on that work and make a nice clean edge on a vent grid circle,
right,
they could inherit and do that clipping.
Yeah.
So yeah, we draw a couple of extra circles there.
Okay, so we do, this is sort of, I was asking you, is this, my first question in my mind when you were telling me about Maker.js is I wonder if this is something I'm going to describe, so like with a JSON file?
Right.
Or is this something that I'm going to imperatively program more like a JS file?
Right.
And you said it's a little bit of a mix, right?
A little bit of a mix. The fun part about Maker.js is that you can do it declaratively. You just won't get these sort of powerful like looping structures and these kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
And again, there's no reason to reinvent what's already been invented with a fantastic language, with loops and conditions.
That's right.
And this
just
whole...
add to it, right?
Exactly.
Add to it with a library.
Yeah, and so I have some documentation, and then there I'll explain how you can use what I call a model.
Mm-hmm.
So in computer science, I guess this is sort of tree branches and then leaf nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And the little circles are sort of the leaf nodes, but the way objects, drawings can contain other drawings are sort of more of a branch.
I see.
Yeah. And that is described with a really simple declarative JSON syntax.
Okay.
That you to create these branches of drawings. It's pretty simple. In fact, if we go up a little bit, we can see where we have we create these things. So here is the paths property of this model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those. That's where we're going to describe the leaf nodes. And the whole thing itself is a model.
Okay.
And then models can contain other models. And then that's it. So there wasn't a whole lot of different types to introduce. Models and paths. And that's
okay.
It. Models can contain other models. And then the whole thing blows up recursively.
Awesome. Okay, now if we go back to where we were looking at the web page itself and the example, here we go, and we're looking at the vent grid circle.
Yeah.
I can scroll down, and the results of this, I can just download, right?
Yeah.
And I can download it. What's a DXF?
Actually, just to jump back to our last topic,
mm-hmm.
If you click download JSON right now,
okay.
You know what? If you want to make this simpler really quick, if you want to change the radius maybe,
okay.
And we can get this just to like a few circles,
okay.
And then we'll look at the JSON.
Okay.
And then we'll go into that declarative example that we were just talking about, because one of the really cool things I like about this project is that you can download the JSON, and if you copy-paste that right back into a variable into the JavaScript code, you can actually just reuse that same JSON all over again into another model. So
in other words,
really,
you can use the code from something else that somebody's created
if
you want, or
if
you can
yeah.
just include the resulting JSON.
Right.
Wow, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's really neat. That's what I really like, is these sort of self-describing languages that kind of go full circle like that.
Now, clicking on this download didn't work, and we were expecting this. Can you tell everybody why it didn't work?
Well, let's see, what browser are we in? We're in, Microsoft Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you hover on that really quick and it says download is only going to work in Chrome and Firefox.
All right, why now. Is that?
We're using this attribute specified by the W3C called the download attribute of an anchor in HTML.
Okay.
And, okay, here you are in Chrome, yeah.
Yeah, now should I go back and do the same one?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fine. So the cool aspect of the download attribute is that you can click a hyperlink and then download a file, which we're pretty used to on the internet.
Yeah.
But what usually happens is that you sent a request to a remote web server to get that file.
Okay.
But in our case, we're generating a file right there in the web page.
Okay.
In fact, we could unplug your Wi-Fi or whatever and just completely generate from those parameters a whole file, and you want to download that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the download attribute.
Okay.
It's not supported in older versions of IE. I think it's kind of an HTML5. I don't even think it's an HTML5 thing. Maybe it is.
Maybe newer than that. Standards are constantly coming out.
Exactly.
This is what we actually see in Chrome tools. There's that download attribute.
Yeah, exactly. There's a download attribute, and then the data is going to come, you know, when you've got I've got a little on-click here that's going to get
that
current data for you.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But if you right-click on I think No, I don't know if that'll work. I think you actually do have to download
it. Do you need to click on it?
Open it up, yeah.
Okay, now tell me about, we were talking about how Edge is considering this.
Yeah, so I went to a website that's for HTML5 standards called Can I Use.
Okay.
And I was wondering, well, I wonder if we can have, if I can use this download attribute in Edge. So here you go, Can I Use. It's a fantastic website, great resource for HTML5. And knowing which browsers support which of these
it's
HTML5
wonderful.
Features.
I use this all the time.
Exactly. So here you see Edge and all the Microsoft IE browsers in the red. And you see Chrome and Firefox have been green for quite a long time, a lot of versions ago.
Yeah.
So the cool thing, though, is if when you highlight over this guy, it says the IE status is currently under consideration.
Okay.
So I clicked on that and I realized that we went to the user voice website for Microsoft here saying, hey, and it's totally community driven saying, hey, let's build this browser based on what the users really want. And so here's one of the things that they had up for vote is the download attribute for anchors. So when we click on that under consideration, we can go look at the number of votes over there.
Wow, 13, 19 votes, is that a lot?
On their top 10 page, I think that one of their top requested things got like 6,000 votes.
Okay.
So this is kind of getting there.
So I'm gonna hit all ideas and look at, here's all of the ideas, and I can hit top and that'll sort them so that I'm looking at the biggest ones.
Right.
There we go. Auto update older IE versions, shadow DOM. These are familiar to us as web developers, these issues. And if we scroll down here, we'll find.
Yeah, we had about 1,300 and we're getting into.
There we are. There it is.
Yeah, and so last week when I checked, this wasn't on the sort of front page of top things, and now it's great to see that it's gotten onto that front page.
So, yeah.
But yeah, if people want to vote on this, you know, Maker.js is dependent on this to light up these really great scenarios where people can download their generated file on the fly. So if people want to
just go click here, and it asks you to either sign in or provide your email address. I'm going to use my personal one, and I'm okay with the world knowing my personal email address. And I'm just going to go ahead and say 3 votes, man.
Hey, great. That's
there we go.
Nice. Yeah, so vote on that thing. It'd be great to have that in Edge.
Excellent. Okay, cool. Well, that was a bit of an aside. Let's go ahead and jump back now. Can you remind me where we were? We were downloading that JSON file, and we were going to go take a look.
Yeah, if you wanted to take a look at that.
Yeah, I definitely do.
It looks like you have some kind of a JSON viewer. Oh, Visual Studio Code.
There we go.
Fantastic.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Now, I forgot, is there a way to format this? I should know this.
I'm not sure, but I'm really comfortable just looking at this as it is.
And, okay, that's fine.
And again, if you were to take just kind of copy-paste this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a model, and we've got sort of some custom properties for the vent grid.
Okay.
The vent grid has a filter radius and its spacing, and then kind of the vent grid circle has the overall radius. Then it has ID, and then it has units. So some of these properties are actual custom properties for that drawing, and some of them are for Maker.js saying, hey, these are the properties that you need to use so that Maker.js knows about your model.
Yeah.
And things like units, paths, origin. If it's a circle, you've got radius, and but we can in the documentation it totally explains what are they, and it's just a small set of attributes. But yeah, the neat thing is you could copy and paste this into a new thing and have it would be sort of baked already.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then you would have a hard time going back and changing.
Yeah,
say, the number of
you'd lose the parametric
circles.
Nature
right.
of it.
Right.
But I still think it's sort of a cool, powerful feature to sort of bootstrap something when you.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's look at the SVG, and I don't know what the behavior is going to be when I try to download this. Okay, so it's going to show me the SVG. This is what the SVG looks like.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to download that instead, save the link as SVG. Let's just put this on my desktop. Actually, let's put this in. I have a special folder for junk stuff. And now let's... my model, open that up, and now that opens in IE, and I think that IE will show it. And it might actually be showing, but it's just white on white. Is that right?
I'm not sure, yeah.
Okay.
Vizio is a pretty good SVG viewer as well.
I'm not sure if I have that installed or not.
Okay.
So here's SVG, open with. I think this will work. Actually, let's open it in CorelDRAW.
Nice.
I guess that's not going to work. Okay, well, anyway, we tried. No way. Come on, work for us.
Oh, it looks like we've got some sort of, yep, no.
No, not working. Okay, so anyway, everybody knows what an SVG is, and it's a vector file.
And you see it right there in the web page anyways, right?
Yeah, it was just going to open
So the DXF file is another interesting thing. If you want to download that DXF, or if you want to go to a different model, it might make a better demo if you go to, why don't we scroll up and go to, you can go to the skateboard deck or anything like that. Yeah, let's go ahead and download that DXF for that guy. Of course, you could customize it with those little sliders if you wanted to.
Okay.
So this is where we kind of get back into these one of the original ideas in when I started coding up a demo for Maker, the original prototype of Maker.js was I was making these metal parts and I was using a website called BigBlueSaw.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making some bike parts here, and the neat thing is that when you think of things in two dimensions, we think of kind of like what you see here, a two-dimensional thing. But when you cut something out of a thicker material, or if you 3D print it thicker, you do have a sort of a third dimension to it.
Yeah, right.
And in this situation, that third dimension is actually really critical because what I've got is, and you see this with a lot of interlocking tongue and groove type of things that Maker people are doing with making benches and even they make 3D printer boxes that have, you know, that sort of tongue and groove stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know the thickness of the material that you're actually mm-hmm. printing out of to get that tongue and groove interlocking action.
Yeah.
So that actually becomes a parameter. You know, the width, this width right here is a parameter of this drawing to make, it needs to know what you're going to print it out of to make that work.
Okay.
So I've drew these up in Adobe Illustrator originally, and then I sent them off to a website called Big Blue Saw.
Okay.
And they're not the only website that is a service that does make parts for you. The neat thing is that they've got this instant quote system. They'll tell you how much something costs.
Yeah.
And then once again, you can manage that cost by printing more things all together all at once.
Okay.
And that's perfect. You know, you're not gaming the system.
So
it's
you've
perfectly
got,
valid way of.
That's multiples of these.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was able to save money on my printing costs. If I were to just say, hey, print one of these, that's going to, for him to boot up his big water jet cutter, that's going to cost $100.
Okay.
But when I started putting a whole bunch of them together like this, this thing was $100. I got these down to like $10 each.
Oh, wow.
So I think this whole thing, I had 12 of them grouped up there, and I think I paid $144.
Yeah, and if it was a big sheet, I wonder how much it would be. It wouldn't
and
be
I,
a whole.
And I think the truth is that he also, at the service there, probably has to do something really similar to make sure that parts don't break away during the manufacturing process. So I almost wonder if he has to do something similar, because I've noticed when I've gotten parts back before, they've had a little bit of a grind there where he's like, oh, I think that's where he must have done something really similar.
Yeah.
So in a sense, you're saving him some work. And I kind of like the way this is sort of like one of those model kits you got when you were a kid.
Yeah.
All the pieces were stuck together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now tell me about the path, because Maker.js is just 2D. So tell me about the path for getting these things into 3D.
Right. So we saw the DXF format there, and we talked a little bit about OpenSCAD before. And OpenSCAD can import 2D and do this thing called extrusion and extrude a two-dimensional thing. I mean, really, it looks just like this. This
is
what it's going to show you, something like that. Two dimensions, extruded any depth that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what file format it likes as its import?
DXF.
DXF. All so that was the other thing, is I saw the DXF format, which was created 20 years ago in the 80s, I even think, actually even prior. And that format is still around, and it's still there in a lot of CNC services. Big Blue Saw is not the only website that cuts stuff for you. There's other sites, and DXF, and we see a lot of them implementing SVG these days. And you know, if you want DXF from CorelDRAW, for example, it may have a plugin for that, or you might have to download some other plugin.
Yeah.
And I think that whole plugin ecosystem was what really turned turned me off, saying, this is nightmare. Why can't I just draw a simple shape?
Yeah.
And so anyways, yeah, you can go ahead and import into OpenSCAD. You can actually import into other 3D software too. You mm-hmm. can, with DXF or SVG, import your two-dimensional thing and extrude it. And that's what I've done here for these little guys, which I've 3D printed. You can see that the shape is parametric. I've just mm-hmm. changed the thickness of that, changed the diameter of the circle, changed mm-hmm. a couple of things. And then I 3D printed these, imported my two-dimensional file into into OpenSCAD, extruded them, and then I sent them off to my own little 3D printer. And then I can test these out on my bicycle or whatnot to see if they fit, to see if they interchange with other parts and whatnot. And then when I finally have that perfect dimension, whichever one of these it's going to be, mm-hmm. I'll send it off to Big Blue Jet and get it cut out of metal.
Yeah,
because
right.
that's the expensive part. But yeah. the 3D printing it, pretty
that's
cheap.
That's the prototype.
Yeah, real
Excellent.
Cheap.
Well, once again, this is another one of those spaces where a lot of us 20 years ago, we got enamored with yeah. the web, and we started writing HTML.
Yeah.
And JavaScript was introduced, and we started programming in JavaScript, and you know, we have this long legacy of doing web development using JavaScript. And now, as a JavaScript developer, as somebody who knows JavaScript, you're all of a sudden in another space.
Yeah.
I mean, I've enjoyed using JavaScript on devices, and so doing the IoT-style maker devices
yeah.
and writing JavaScript. And now I'm using JavaScript to describe the 2D parts that I want to cut out
yeah.
to marry up with my devices and create robots or whatever they are.
Yeah. It's super exciting. I'm really, really enjoying this. And I hope I'm really trying to find that community for mm-hmm. MakerJS. And mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of people out there doing this stuff. You know, I just launched a week ago, so we're still pretty young.
Yeah.
But I'm putting a ton of documentation on the site. Every day I'm posting a new piece of documentation to help people to see a lot of examples, a lot of hands-on JS fiddles that they can see and use and get that hoping to get that community started.
Excellent. Well, Dan, thanks so much for talking to us about this today. It's really an awesome topic.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Is there any other way in which developers that are watching can get engaged besides going to microsoft.github.io/maker.js?
Well, if you do go to that website, on the About page, I've got a little chat room mm-hmm. from Gitter on there. So
good.
Jump
That's
into
good
the
insight.
Chat room and chat it up. Ask me questions. I've also got links like Let's Ask on Stack Overflow. And then I'm going to be publishing soon an article on how you can put your drawing on NPM mm-hmm. so that other people can require it and start depending on it and reuse other people's drawings. That's
yeah.
the whole ecosystem. I'd really love to see people creating drawings and people sharing and reusing other people's drawings.
Excellent. Do you want to give folks your Twitter handle?
I don't really tweet all that much.
All right.
So
not a tweeter.
But yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right, check out the website.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you a lot for joining us this week on Code Chat. It has been a really fun discussion, and we just hope to see you next time. So take care.
Thanks.